go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and maybe sometimes not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Yes, yes, yes. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing good. You know, just a new day, same stuff. Another day in paradise. Enjoying school as much as you can enjoy it.
Oh, you started the goal grind again.
Oh, I know. I'm not. I mean, it's not too bad. You know, I guess I kind of imagine it'd be a lot worse this semester compared to last semester. But the school got their shit together when it came to online learning, and they fixed a lot of the problems that we had in the last semester. So it's not too bad so far.
Okay.
But all right. Well, I say let's do something a little bit different for a cold open, though. I actually have a Star Wars question. So we know about we know that there's been conflicts throughout the galaxy. You know, there's a lot of time in the Star Wars universe in our galaxy, but it's mostly unexplored. But what I'm curious about is, we know that it's also a galaxy far, far away, but were there any other species, or do we have any other exogalactic, you know, threats or contact, you know, with other galaxies other than the one, you know, that everybody knows about in the Star Wars universe?
Other galaxies, I don't really know. But there is parts of the current Star Wars galaxy that is kind of like the unknown regions or wild space, where it's beyond the Outer Rim, and the Republic or the Empire hasn't ventured out too far. Now, Grand Admiral Thrawn, he's a Chiss, and I think he comes from the unknown region, because his species is not common, and he's one of the only Chiss that you kind of see within the Star Wars galaxy.
But that's kind of confusing, though. If the Outer Rim, I would imagine that, you know, this galaxy is kind of similar to ours, and to where we would be closer to the Outer Rim of the galaxy. But I would imagine it would be kind of that towards the outside spirals of the spiral galaxy rather than closer towards the black hole. If it's the Outer Rim, you know, I would imagine that would kind of be the end of the galaxy. I wouldn't imagine there would be more uncharted space. I figure it'd just be
It could be one of those. It's the Outer Rim of what they know.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, they don't really have charted hyperspace lanes out there, so they haven't ventured too far beyond the Outer Rim. It's just like the Outer Rim of the territory, kind of like how the coast is our boundary. You know.
Now, okay, hang on. Explain. Do you understand the hyperspace lanes? Like, are they? Is it like certain corridors or pathways that ships can travel, and that's why there's limited charted space in the galaxy?
Yeah, they're almost like. I mean, and I've read some of the new Star Wars books, and they almost sound like just the interstate systems. You know, you got to take I-35 in Dallas if you want to go all the way down to South Texas, or up through Oklahoma and into Kansas. Or, you know, you got to take I-10 across the United States.
Or could they be like the, oh, I don't remember. We have our own like interplanetary network in our solar system, to where there's like certain pathways to where gravitationally you can use the gravitational momentum of a planet to slingshot, and it's like you can use the gravity and then of the planets, and then based off of the distance of other planets, there's shortest pathways. Like there's certain corridors to where it's like you get the shortest distance between the planets, and but you can maximize your speed getting there by using the gravity, and that's how they slingshot like satellites into deep space. Would it be kind of similar concept to that, kind of that gravitational pathway between the planets?
The best way I can explain it is like a highway system, because, you know, what happens when you go to hyperspace, you're not really, once you're in hyperspace, you should be relatively safe. It's like driving on a highway where there's no obstructions, no other traffic.
Hmm.
So other people could use that hyperspace corridor, but when you see, like when you watch Clone Wars and you see their ships traveling kind of in formation, I don't know. I've gotten conflicting data on the hyperspace, so there might need to be some more research on it. But it's almost like an interstate highway with no traffic.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. That was one of the things that's just always I've been curious about. Like in the Star Trek universe, you know that there are other species outside of the galaxy, because, you know, at least in the OG one, they've traveled outside of the galaxy before, at least once or twice. If memory serves me right. So you kind of know there's exogalactic threats. And I was just curious about, you know, do you really, you know, in this huge timeline of the Star Wars universe, these 30,000 years of, you know, lore, has there ever been any outside threats of the galaxy? Like, maybe that would explain why humans are a thing, maybe, that they left Earth and came to this distant galaxy. That'd be fun.
No, I think, I don't know. I know I don't know if it's extended universe or if it's canon. I'm pretty sure it's EU. So books and comics before Disney took over. You know, the reason Palpatine kept the Imperial Army or Navy so strong is because he feared a threat coming from outside the galaxy. So I don't know.
You know, I've actually heard something about that, because I remember watching like a Star Wars theory video and something similar, mm-hmm. but they didn't really, it was like very briefly covered, and it was why Palpatine kind of tolerated Thrawn, because I guess like, you know, Palpatine was kind of a xenophobe, preferred humans in his fleet, not aliens, but was okay with Thrawn because Thrawn was like, understood this threat, and they kind of was mutually beneficial. That's why they were kind of eventually started working.
Yeah, he could use them in case anything ever did happen.
Right.
So. Yeah, okay.
All right. Well.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
All right, so what are we talking about today, brother?
Today, we are finishing our discussion on Star Trek Discovery's Season 1, which is Episodes 13, entitled What's Past is Prologue, and then 14, The War Without, The War Within, and then the finale, Will You Take My Hand? So, that's what we're going to discuss today.
I don't get any of these names of these episodes. What is past is prologue? What does that have to do with episode 13, though?
Well, 13, if you remember, is the episode, the last episode within the Mirror Universe. That's when Brenham boards the mothership or the Emperor's ship. Lorca is kind of set free and is rallying his constituents.
Because Brenham figured out at the end of episode 12 that... Lorca? Yeah, Lorca. Yes. Lorca was the he wasn't there. Lorca. He was from the Mirror Universe.
Mirror, yeah.
And where were they going with this? The worst. You know what the worst part is? I'm not even stoned right now, and I don't even know where I was going with this.
Way to go!
This is like the first episode I've done for this show where I've done it pretty much sober. And I still lose my train of thought. So it's not just a stoner thing. It's just me.
Okay. Well, anyways, Lorca was Mirror Universe Lorca, and we find out that he had staged a coup against the Emperor. Mm-hmm. So now in episode 13, he was rallying his constituents to, again, try to overthrow the Emperor. Which, you know, it led to, you found out the Emperor's ship was powered by this crazy spore sphere or something, and it was kind of destroying the mycelial network.
Yeah, the way I think they did, that they described it was, like a hub that was collecting or absorbing the spores into this, like, it was a concentration of the spores that it was collecting throughout the universe, because I guess the spores are interconnected throughout every universe, which they kind of have to be since they got there. And because it's so powerful and it's taking up so much of it, it's the one that's responsible for killing the network. And eventually, I'm not entirely sure how, but once they, you know, exhausted this resource, it will be the end of all life in the universe, because there will be no more spores left. Yeah, in every universe. So,
yeah, which I was like, okay, this is interesting stakes, and their solution is to fire spore filled torpedoes at it and blow it up after Brenham manages to deactivate the containment field.
But it was funny though. I don't know if you I don't know if you noticed this, but they also mentioned that this had the potential, you know, power to destroy entire planets. I'm like, oh, so it's the Star Trek version of a Death Star. It was literally just a planet killer. And then they ended up blowing up the core to save the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, very Star Wars parallels there.
Yeah, I don't think I connected those dots when I watched it, but yeah. And the funny thing was, I mean, at least in my opinion, I don't know if you'll share the same opinion, but this episode felt more like a finale episode than the actual season finale did.
Yeah, it actually, yeah, I would agree with that.
It felt more like the climax of the season than anything else. And then the last two episodes really felt like the last 20 minutes of a movie, where the climax is over and now you're just wrapping up and sending the characters on their merry way.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It had a little bit of a plot twist at the end when they find out that they jumped back to the wrong time. So they go 9 months into the future and find out that the war is pretty much lost.
So, I mean, yeah, because I imagine they were in the mirror universe matter of a couple of days or maybe a week. But as they explained, or Stemmons explained, that, you know, on the mycelial network, he could navigate time too, and not only get them back to their universe. So they were trying to get to jump back to the exact time that they left the universe, which didn't happen because Stamens managed to mess it up and overshoot by 9 months, which was interesting. But in this, you know, we find out, or Lorca gets killed. I mean, most of this episode was just pretty much one 45-minute fight scene.
Which, I mean, I'm not complaining about. I mean, it wasn't bad.
It was all right. No, it wasn't bad for fight scenes in the Star Trek universe go.
Yeah.
So, but Lorca gets killed. He gets stabbed in the back with a giant sword that felt very, you know, medieval.
Yeah.
And then, you know what's funny? Speaking of Star Wars that we were talking about in the cold open, when Lorca falls through and kind of lands into this spore engine or whatever that the Discovery has to blow up, his screams sound like a TIE fighter swooping in a little bit.
I didn't notice that. So you didn't get the Death Star reference, but you hear the TIE fighter out of his screams?
Yeah, apparently.
All right, party on.
Yeah. Don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I don't either. To his what? How does that saying go? To his own.
I don't know. I don't know what saying you're referring to.
Of course not. Let's see.
Was there anything in this episode, in episode 13, so What's the Past Prolonged, that just stuck out to you? Because while it was a massive, you know, climactic episode for the entire season,
Okay, I mean, there's one we could talk about. Maybe Burnham's decision to save Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, okay, and then there's more. Like, there's also what the fuck happened to the Mirror Universe then? Because there's an emperor in Mirror Mirror.
So, probably just someone took control.
Like, because yeah, Lorca's someone sees dead,
power in the Emperor's power gone. Vacuum.
Yeah, I mean the their flagship was destroyed. They're in the middle of a rebellion. The Emperor's dead.
Maybe she returns at some point.
Could be, but I mean
we haven't seen season three, but I don't think. Is it Michelle Yeoh? I think that's the actress's name. I don't think she appears in season three.
Well, no, because in season three they're in the future, supposedly.
Yeah, and season three will be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen it yet, so yeah, it will be interesting.
No, I mean, and for a brief tangent, I mean, one of my former coworkers, who's a big Trekkie, he texted me after he watched the finale. He goes, "That season was the biggest pile of trash I think I've ever seen Star Trek produce."
Really?
And then the following morning, I saw an article that said the exact opposite. This is the best and closest to Star Trek has gotten since premiering on CBS All Access. So I'm like,
I know. Okay, I've heard those similar reactions myself. Like, I've heard actual Trekkies just absolutely hate it, but I hear like all the critics and all the news organizations,
the Saw fans, like, just love it.
And I'm like, okay, it's one. I'm gonna believe your friend because
yeah,
he seemed, from what you've told me in the past, he seems like he's an actual Trekkie, not one of these soft.
You know, no, he's soft a hardcore fan. Kinda,
yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's mostly just propaganda, PC propaganda, if I'm going to be 100% honest with you.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We're like 5 episodes away from it.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually, but
we'll get there. We're going to roll through season 2. But anyways, we'll get back on topic. So episode 13. We did see a return of the lady chief security officer who the tardigrade pretty much annihilated. Earlier in the season, we saw her Mirror Universe counterpart.
And I was going to say she survived, but then she, you know, got blown up in the explosion. I figured she would be an interesting one if she survived. Maybe she took the throne of Emperor, but she was on the ship when it blew up, so.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of Mirror Universe counterparts, remind me, because I know we see Mirror Universe Spock appear in the original series.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a part of the Terran Empire, or is he fighting against the Terran Empire?
He's a part of the Empire, but he gets convinced by normal universe Spock and normal universe, or no, I'm sorry, normal universe Kirk, not normal universe Spock, to take the throne. He eventually becomes the Emperor, and he institutes wide reforms throughout the Empire. And this is actually goes into Deep Space Nine, to where when they go back, they discover in Deep Space Nine, they discover that not only has the Terran Empire fallen, a new Cardassian Bajoran Klingon Alliance took its place and has actually enslaved humanity. So now,
oh yeah, I do remember seeing that Deep Space High episode. This is Deep Space Nine.
I know.
Deep Space Nine episode.
Uh-huh. Yes. And if you didn't know, we kind of named the show after it, so.
A little bit.
A little bit. But, so supposedly Spock was the one who led to the downfall of the Terran Empire.
Okay, because, I mean, with them being super xenophobic, I was surprised. I mean, thinking back on that episode, it was surprising that a Vulcan would be a part of it.
Yeah, there are Vulcans. You just gotta Discovery is just weird. They try to improve everything and they end up just doing shit that makes no sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, Clark, Spock. Jesus Christ. yes. To answer your question, both. Spock was originally pro-Empire, worked with on the Enterprise with Kirk as his first officer, and then eventually became the Emperor, massive reform. So technically, it's almost like he did his own rebellion, but more like a coup d'etat.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I guess, you know, one more thing we can talk about in this episode is Lorca being in love with Brenham. If you want to go there, because, you know, they were all fighting on the bridge, and Brenham was fighting, and Lorca was killing some of his own constituents in order to protect her.
You caught that, did he kill some?
I thought so. I thought he would fight some of the, maybe I'm getting it confused, but I thought, you know, when Brenham was fighting people, he would, like, every now and then throw a knife into somebody and,
no,
or at least get him off of her.
I know what you're talking about. That was Giorgio. Threw a knife at him, stabbed him in the, got him in like the back shoulder, and then he pulled it out and tried to throw it back, but she threw a guy in his way. That's what that was with the knife.
I thought, okay, maybe that was the case, but I thought there was times when Lorca would,
because Lorca was heading towards Burnham to help the security chick from the mirror universe who was fighting her. And then Giorgio saw him.
But was he
to,
since he made it clear that he didn't want anyone to harm her, her as in Brenham, so maybe he was really going to get the security chick off of her.
Maybe.
I was watching it, and it would just come off as he's trying to fight Giorgio, but prevent Brenham from getting hurt.
I don't know. Maybe I would need to rewatch it, but I didn't like that idea of the love relationship, or the supposed love relationship between Lorca and
but it does make sense to why he pulled him, or pulled Brenham out of prison.
It would, and I feel like that's the only reason why they did it. Because there was no real buildup, there was no tension, there was no, like, there was no hint from Lorca that there was any kind of feelings. That,
oh yeah, there was,
you know,
absolutely,
I mean, it was just
no,
like,
clue until it was just like dropped on our doorstep.
Yeah. Oh yeah, by the way, it turns out he was in love with you the entire time. That's why he did it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just late. Honestly, it just felt like lazy writing.
Yeah. If he was so in love, they would have just, you know, thrown a threesome in there with Tyler and Brenham and Lorca.
I don't know if, yeah, Tyler and Lorca would want to do that. Devil's three-way. I mean, okay.
He is from the mirror universe, so maybe the name would be fitting.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, in what was it, 15, Giorgio banged a couple of Orions.
Oh, yeah, so we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
We will get there. Okay, I have nothing else on 13. I think definitely 13 was probably the more likable episode. 14 wasn't bad, but I think out of the final three, it was the most likable episode. I think it's really the climax of the season, and it was the highlight of my watching for this recording of Deep Space High.
Yeah, I mean, I would pretty much agree too. Trying to think if there was anything in, because 15, the finale, I didn't like the finale. The 14,
here's what I'll say. I liked the start of it. Okay, you find out they were 9 months. They overshot their timeline by 9 months. The Federation has their backs to the wall. There's a lot of outposts gone. We even find out in this episode Outpost 1 is gone, which is the closest to Earth. So Klingons are in the back, you know, in our solar system. They are knocking on the door of Earth. And, you know, one of the things I liked was when Admiral Cornwallis boarded the Discovery, because they didn't know who they were dealing with. Because you find out Mirror Universe's Discovery was killed or destroyed pretty much right after it entered the universe,
because they swap places. So
yeah, and right after that,
yeah, go ahead.
And Cornwallis was there.
Oh,
she
yeah
was like, I saw the debris of the Discovery. What the hell is this? Who are y'all? And that's when, again, Sarek's conveniently there to do a mind meld on Saru.
Yeah, who needs to ask questions? Just do the Mike and Vulcan mind meld. You know,
yeah.
Why even bother? Just get straight to the point.
Yeah, and that's when they're like, oh, this is our actual crew, not the, not posers.
Yeah.
I don't know who, if they thought the Discovery was gone, I don't know who they would have thought these people were.
Well, that's probably why they were freaking out and asking questions like, okay, we know that the ship is gone, and then now the ship magically reappears out of nowhere, so
yeah,
got some explaining to do.
Yeah, then we see an Andorian.
Yeah, I mean,
it's always interesting to see them.
Yeah, a little bit.
His voice seemed a little synthesized. I don't remember, because I know they're heavily involved in the Enterprise show. Well, I don't remember their voice sounding so synthesized.
It might just have been him, and I thought it was a hologram that he mostly talked. And that might
He does appear in the initial boarding party, and right, then but once I didn't know he gives talked, the all though. Clear. Yeah, I think he gives the all clear signal for the Admiral and Sarek to beam over.
I don't know.
But I thought all that was interesting. It was intriguing. While I like 13 better, it was the first half of this episode was very intriguing.
Yeah, because then you start to figure out that the Klingons are just kind of tearing apart the Federation space and Federation territory for pretty much their own personal gain, for their own plunder. They're not unified. There is no unification. It's just all factions competing to destroy, gain as much territory, wealth, and glory as they can. It's just senseless slaughter. There's no consistency. They're not fighting. The Federation isn't fighting one enemy anymore. Now, apparently, they're fighting 24 houses because it was just a single house that destroyed Starbase One.
I don't remember the house they said, but it was a house emblem instead of the Klingon Empire insignia painted on the ruins. But where the episode started to lose me was the back half. Once they started about Stemmons couldn't jump, so Stemmons, all his spores were gone. He wouldn't have enough time to mature any of them. And then they're like, "Oh, well, we could just terraform this planet and have more stores, and bippity boppity boop, we're good to go."
Yeah, I mean, that kind of bothered me too. But
because the back half. The first half did such a good job explaining everything and really seeing the stakes of what happened because the Discovery was gone for 9 months. They weren't able to use the algorithm that they gathered in the previous episodes against the Klingons to beat their cloaking technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, then we just start whipping out the pseudoscience, and now you can randomly terraform this planet, and now you have all the magical spores to jump wherever you want. And it was like, okay. And then I was a little intrigued once they brought, again, the other twist at the end of this episode was actually bringing out Mirror Universe Giorgio, pretending it was their Giorgio, and she was going to take over as captain of the Discovery.
Yeah, and then you could definitely tell the difference in command styles between the Terran universe and the Federation, or at least the helmsman could.
Beginning of 15. But I mean, the episode, the first half of it, did a really good job of setting up. Middle part lost me. The end, where they announce her as captain, I'm like, okay, you assume there's going to be some sort of big fight. They're going to do something pretty big, something pretty bold. If they're willing to bring her, a ruthless cutthroat emperor from a mirror universe, to helm their ship and lead whatever plan they're going to be going through, there was a lot of build for a very lackluster
climax
boom in episode 15.
Well, technically, there was no boom. They just blackmailed them, which is very disappointing.
Yeah, and that'll bring some talking points.
I don't know.
Let's get into it, because there's not much from 14. I pretty much said, I praise what I liked. I've spoken my grievances on what I didn't like about the episode. There's not much more I can say about it.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it. I can't really disagree. I'm trying to think if there's just anything else.
You know what I did find out?
Hmm.
I've been spelling Kronos wrong this whole time.
What? You've been spelling it with a K?
Kronos, not with a Q.
Yeah, where do I have that up in here? No, I don't. It's out. Okay, it's outside. I have a Klingon dictionary. I could look it up, but that's how they spelt it in the show. But I don't know if how it was originally done, because I think originally it was with a K, but I think they changed it for the show. But I can't. I don't know for certain.
Okay. So I typed it into Google. It says it's Kronos, the way I spell it, Kronos. But the formal name is Q'ONOS. Don't know what the difference is, but whatever.
Well, I guess it's one's air quote English version and the other's air quote Klingonese. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which reminds, you know,
Been spelling it wrong.
No, you haven't. Which you would think that now that they have so much dialogue with Klingonese and they have it to where whole episodes are pretty much just done in Klingonese, where they have whole dialogue.
Is that what it's actually called? Is it actually called Klingonese?
Yeah, that's what they call it in the OG series.
I've just always called it Klingon.
Yeah. It's kind of like Chinese or...
No, I get you.
I've been
referring to it wrong this whole time.
Yeah, I think it's Klingonese.
You know, it'd be like saying you speak China is how I've been saying it, instead of Chinese or Mandarin.
Yeah, I guess that would be right. But I figured that what they should do is, given how much dialogue and how much, you know, they probably invented a lot of new words with Klingonese, they should put out their own Klingon dictionary. Their own version of it, so people can start learning it. Now, I have one version of it, of a Star Trek dictionary, but this was before Discovery, so the dialect might be a little bit different, and it's a lot smaller.
Nerd. Fuck off. That's whatever. I have my Star Wars books too. You know, it's funny. You have a Star Wars dictionary, and I got these Star Wars, like Book of the Sith and Book of the Jedi books. That's like a, you know, it's like a Sith and a Jedi guidebook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen those.
Oh, we're right there, just with different. I mean, we're both nerds with just our different franchises.
Yeah, a little bit different styles. I think I actually have one of those Star Wars books.
Nerd.
But it's not on. Yeah. No, right. It's on the different lightsaber forms, though. It's not on.
I bet that's listed in there. I went through the Sith one, but I haven't gone through the Jedi one. But there's also a bounty hunter guide.
I didn't know that.
And a Imperial handbook. So the guide to being an Imperial. So I guess they're pretty hard to find, because I found one set going online for like $1,000 to get all four of them. Yeah. You can get them in two different sets. You know, the Force set, which is like this Sith and the Jedi, and then you can get the Bounty Hunter and the Imperial one separately. But all four together, I saw going for like $100 and even $1,000. I was like, no, thank you. But anyways, back to Trek.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, that's kind of the reason why, well, one, that's one of the reasons why I've been really getting into Star Wars recently, too. But that's why I like both Star Wars and Star Trek. It's just so much lore, and there's so much thought and detail put in everything that...
Not to this show.
Yeah, I know, right? But for these shows that we, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek, they go into so much detail, and it's... There's so much history to it, and it's so creative. It's there's just so much to enjoy, and it's just so well done. Especially after hearing Dave Filoni on Gallery explaining for Star Wars, you just learn so much more. There's just so much more detail behind it that you never really think about. Like George Lucas literally thought of everything for Star Wars. You know, every little detail. And it was same with Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek. I mean, just the level of detail that they put in.
They built universes.
They really did. Like, fuck, George Lucas invented damn near 30,000 years worth of history, and he pretty much made it up all off the top of his head. I mean, that's just truly remarkable. So what these guys
that do. And advanced cinema technology, so and the way they shot film, so you know, pioneers.
Both were
Gene Roddenberry was a pioneer with this big sci-fi show we like to call Star Trek, and George Lucas pioneered the ways movies were going to be made after 1977.
Yep. Well,
always changes. But let's talk about this finale.
Yeah. May Gene rest in peace.
Yes. So let's talk about this finale, because I was like, so you know something's going to go on. There's an away mission that consists of MU, Giorgio, Ash Tyler. Don't know why you bring him along. We mentioned this last episode. He is a liability, even though they say he is okay. Still a liability, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I know they explain that. Yeah, I mean, like, they're on Kronos. He has Vox memories. You know, he still
He seems useful. Better. And, yes, and can be useful. But we've experienced the last few episodes. He is just a liability right now. And what if they take him onto the planet and he gets unhinged again, and then, boop, everything's fucked up?
Well, they didn't have much of a choice. I mean,
no, you're right. They didn't, and he was useful. But I'm just saying, I would have been hesitant to bring him.
Yeah, probably. But
and then they bring
Tilly. I would have been a little bit more. You know, why bring Tilly though?
Oh, you know why? Giorgio seems like she had a very fond connection with Mirror Universe Tilly. They talked about all the killings they went on. It was almost like Tilly was a second daughter to Giorgio in the Mirror Universe. She was very fond of her.
I mean, that makes sense. And, you know, Giorgio's kind of a sexual one and not afraid to, you know, get with them women. So you never know. Maybe it was a little bit more than that.
Could have been. Could have been. Very well. Maybe Tilly slept her way to Captain of the Discovery in the Mirror Universe.
Could be. I mean, sleeping with the Emperor would be a right way to get a ship.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, they're so casual with killing and everything else. I mean, you would think they'd be this, you know, super casual with sex.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't afraid to do a threesome scene with Giorgio and two Orions, so.
A little disappointed you couldn't actually watch anything, though. It's like, you get to see some ass shaking and damn near titties, but it's all covered up. Like, damn, we get to see Klingon titties, but not real titties? Come on.
You know, I'm curious how they edited that win, because I think we mentioned this in previous episodes. Discovery's airing on CBS right now. Like, last Thursday, episode 13 was.
They probably just cut out, like, airing. The one frame from up top to where you see the nipples, and they probably showed the rest of it, but that was about it. And then it's for the Orions.
Gory.
Yeah. Well, are you talking about gore wise or nudity wise?
All of it, just in general, because it is a TVMA. I mean, half this episodes of the season are TVMA. So edit it down to make it like TV-14, and
yeah, you know. But it's not. I'm sure it's not too hard for them to go back and edit it. They have professional editors. It's not like little rinky dink shit like we do.
No. Yeah. Well, it just the differences between American TV and how censored it is versus, say, like British TV, where you can get away with some of that stuff.
Yeah, or Australian. They can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
And damn near.
So.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
But yeah, I was just thinking about it. Because sometimes it will take away from the story if you have to edit it too much.
See, now, okay, I got a question. What's up with both of these universes having green dancing sex slaves? Star Wars and Star Trek.
Well, Orions are naturally green, where I will argue, I mean, I don't think there's a different colored Orion, but Twi'leks are multicolored. They can be green, blue, pink.
But all the Twi'leks that I've ever seen that are like dancing sex slaves in Star Wars are all green. And you see a lot more green Twi'leks than any other Twi'lek.
In Clone Wars, there's some. Maybe green is just the dominant pigment of the skin of Twi'leks in the Star Wars universe.
Could be. I'm curious how many different colors there are. Red, blue, green? Only the colors of Jedi lightsabers.
Red, blue, green, pink.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, you see a lot of different colors in Clone. There's actually a whole episode where that takes place on Ryloth, which is the Twi'lek homeworld.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. There's a couple story arcs, I think. I think I've seen one of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know how we keep going into Star Wars when this has got to be a Star Trek episode.
Green dancing sex slaves?
Yeah, but keep getting too tangented.
Eh, they're not bad. They're still interesting. I think it's good conversation.
So here's the big plot of this finale, and secretly the Federation and Starfleet has decided to pretty much blow up Kronos.
Yeah, I mean,
and
they're,
that was the whole plan. They went down there with a bomb, and they described it as pretty much a hydrogen bomb, and it wasn't going to blow it up, but it would render the planet uninhabitable.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to...
I was like...
Like, you put a hydrogen bomb in active volcanoes, like, that's going to... Yeah, that's going to do
something.
It's going
to screw some shit up.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, imagine dropping a nuke in a super volcano. Imagine the level of devastation that would happen.
Or a firecracker in a toilet.
Yeah, well, I would definitely break the toilet in
that. Have you seen some of those videos? It breaks the toilets.
Yeah.
Making the toilet bit, the toilet unuseful.
Yeah.
Or useless. So I was like, you know, watching it, you know, something devious has got to happen given that Georgios leading the mission. Then you find out, and I was like, okay, that's too bold, I think, for Starfleet and even CBS to go through with pretty much committing genocide on an entire population. And what happens? Nothing happens because Brenham talks him out of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the boldness of it, I actually think it kind of makes sense, but because just the pure level of desperation from the Federation.
No,
it
makes complete sense. And I was like, I almost wanted the Federation to go that far because they were on the ropes. This was, you know, this was their help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope moment.
Yeah, really. It really is. So, you know, it's funny, too. Like, every time that in the Star Trek universe, the Federation fights the Klingons always win.
Yeah, and it's just... It's because the Klingons are willing to go to limits that the Federation just won't.
Yeah, well, it's because the Federation has their principles.
Yeah.
And that's what Burnham fights for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it was just...
Kind of. She didn't fight for him the first time she committed mutiny.
No,
even though she clearly states it was a mistake now. She gets it. It was a mistake. I should have fought for our principles. Okay.
I don't know.
The Vulcans weren't afraid to attack first.
No.
At least they gained respect.
Well, the Vulcans are... Yeah. I mean, the Vulcans were the smart ones for a reason.
Well, they're logical.
Yeah, but logic
they understand the. Yeah, they understand the Klingons' ideology and way of thinking
better than
they'll respect you. If you know, if you throw a punch, they're gonna respect you. If you're gonna roll over, they're gonna walk right over you. As we saw here, and the Federation got rolled over.
When did the Federation become such a bunch of, you know, big pile of pussies? You know, like in Enterprise, you know, the member, or I don't want to say the Federation, but Starfleet, they weren't a bunch of pushovers. They were pretty tough. You know, when you threw a punch, they punched back. They weren't afraid to you know, brawl, you know. And then, and same with Next Generation, same with the original series. You know, Kirk wasn't afraid to fight. Picard wasn't afraid to fight. He would just rather find a diplomatic solution. Fuck, Sisko punched Q, so he's damn sure gonna fight. Like, he fought a fucking war against the Dominion. So, I mean, it's like all these, you know.
I won't say it's not that they're not afraid to fight, because you see the Starfleet tried. It's just, you know, when you need to go the extra mile to.
Yeah, but here's one of the
end,
things that I really...
To end the things and get them off the ropes. They just couldn't do it, you know. They couldn't say, okay, they couldn't do what Truman did to Japan in 1945.
Nuke them?
Essentially. I mean, that's, I mean, not like, I'm not saying, oh, that was the only way to do it, but you want to save your own skin and protect American lives and protect Federation lives in this case, you're going to have to do things you don't want to do, even though it's going to live in, you know, those two bombings are now very infamous.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Maybe it's just different because it's different in the timeline. Like, timeline-wise, this was, you know, hundreds of years apart, but you see... You know, you see the Federation at war. The Federation goes to war with the Klingons in Deep Space Nine. And then the Federation also goes to war with the Dominion in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And you see a lot more resiliency, a lot more willingness to fight, a lot more, especially, and they're in the same set of circumstances. I mean, when the Dominion attacked, the Breen assaulted Earth. They got to Earth and launched a full I don't want to say full invasion, but more like a kamikaze invasion where they constantly bombarded the planet and just a show of force like, hey, we're not afraid of you. And the Dominion damn near took the entire Alpha Quadrant with their backs against the wall. And they didn't resort to this kind of... So it's just like...
Well, it's also one of those things, the tactics they had, because you could tell here Starfleet's a exploratory group. They had no war tactics. They had no... you know, warrior mindset, and it hurt them. And maybe they learned from this war that they, you know, while they're a peaceful exploratory interplanetary group, that they're going to have some tricks up their sleeves, and they're going to have some military tactics more than what they did to fight this Klingon war.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, that's one of the things with Starfleet, though, and that's actually one of the things that... Lower Decks even joked about that Starfleet is very quick to adapt and change to adversity. You know, when the Borg, when dealing with the Borg situation, they went from 0 to 60 on anti-Borg technology like that. Their level of innovation, there's some fan theories that the Borg don't actually want to assimilate Earth. Otherwise, they would have sent a full force or a full fleet to assimilate Earth. They just keep sending one ship at a time over periods of a couple of years to get technological development real quick, because humans' ability to innovate and adapt to their situations, they're so good at it that they create new technologies that the Borg want to assimilate. So there's some fan theories that they're more like the Borg is farming Earth for technology rather than just straight up try and conquer them because of their ability to adapt. And to see them resort to this, it was just, I don't know. It's believable, but
I mean, when you're not only taking the wall and you don't want to waste any more Federation lives, you know,
well, I mean, I figured
to resort to the last option in the playbook.
I mean, I figured if they were, you know, on the verge of invading Earth, you know, they've only lost about 20% of their territory. Well, they say they were near, but I mean, they also said they only lost about 20% of their territory. And I'm like,
ugh. Yeah, but Earth is where the Federation, that's their home, Starfleet's home headquarters and this fun stuff. They were making them play on their home planet.
Yeah. And then I guess we should also keep in mind that the Federation was a lot smaller in the 23rd century than the 24th century.
Yeah. So. You know,
I didn't like it. I'm just gonna be. I didn't like the episode. I thought it was a bad finale.
Here's where, and this episode actually reminded me, because there were some good episodes in the season, and this episode reminded me why I didn't like season one so much is because it ended in such a lackluster way, and here's it. I'm gonna pose
funny
the question
until you get high, though. I will admit that.
Yeah, that was funny. There's the highness in our deep space. High. But the war essentially ends because Giorgio planted the bomb in the volcano, which is now given to L'Oreal and her fabulous hair brand. And she pretty much uses that to say, I have the planet to destroy, or I have the power to destroy our planet. You will align under me or die.
Pretty much. I mean, it's not a bad way to gain power.
No, and
But it wasn't a Klingon wave.
It didn't feel right. I mean, it just felt off. And that was going to be my question. I was like, would the 24 houses of the Klingons really fall in line because they are threatened by this catastrophe of their home world?
I think they
is
would.
Is this how you would see? I mean, when you pictured the end of this war, this is not how I pictured it.
No, it wasn't, and I don't know if this is really the end, but it should be the end. But I don't know, because in Star Trek history, Kirk often refers to the war with the Klingons. That first contact didn't go well. It eventually led to a war with the Klingons, and it did not go very well. This was supposed to be the explanation behind the war with the Klingons, and it did not go very well. It did not make a lot of sense. I did not like how it ended. And one, the way that they made it seem like the war was not long after first contact, not 100 years after first contact, but
yeah, so there's already some story differences there.
And then would they fall in line though? I mean, if they, you know, if somebody threatened to blow up Earth, you know, I'd probably get in line. But
yeah,
I would,
like,
knowing the
what
Klingons,
if it's an empty
they would,
threat?
I don't think it's an empty threat. I think they would actually.
No, but it's, we know it's not an empty threat, but that would have to go through the house's minds. Is like, could this just be an empty threat and all she's holding is a data pad that has her medical records on it?
Yeah, I mean,
or,
it could.
Or
and
her
I'm
favorite
sure she
drink
had a,
recipe.
I'm sure she had
or
a
the chose. List of all the guys she banged.
I actually know a couple chicks who do that.
There's guys that do it too, so it goes both ways.
That's true.
Probably more guys than chicks, actually.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, it's a flawed, you're right, there's a lot of plot holes, it's a very flawed way of doing it. It wasn't a good ending. I mean,
it didn't feel like an end to a war. It's like, okay, we befriended this person in the Klingon Empire, and then we're going to have them control it and pretty much have them give up the war, even though they have the entire advantage.
It could. It would make sense to why there would be tension between the Federation and the Klingon Empire and during Kirk's time, you know, where you have almost like a Cold War kind of thing between the two. It's, you know, there was no real end to the war, but there was a stalemate to the war, so there's still a lot of tension between the two nations. There's a lot of territorial disputes between the two nations in the original series. So I mean, there's some aspects to where it makes sense, but yeah. I mean, it's just it could have been done better. This was a CBS's attempt to try and give Star Trek fans what they think they wanted instead of what they really wanted.
Disney.
Yep. Oh, pretty much.
So this raises the last question, because the episode, I guess probably two more questions. Maybe. We'll see. So Branham and crew is, you know, back on Earth, and Starfleet pretty much gives her ranking back. What was the phrasing I wanted to use? Oh, they restore her rank as commander. The president of the Federation pardons her and expunges her record. So I guess she is no longer technically, or legally speaking, the first mutineer, even though she is the first mutineer. What did you think about that?
I mean, it clears up a plot hole, but
true.
It seems easy. Hey, you start a war, we lose nearly 20% of the Federation, millions are dead, but you know what? You blackmailed the Klingon Empire into a stalemate, so we'll pardon you, and all is forgiven, and you can have your ship back.
Yeah, you learned your lesson.
Yeah, just a slap.
That's all this was a giant 15-episode lesson.
Yeah, so now you got banged a couple times, you had a little bit of heartbreak, but yeah, slap on the wrist. That's all you really need.
6 months in jail, that's all you needed.
Yeah, and for killing millions of Federation citizens.
Yeah, way to go. Including your close friend, Giorgio.
Whom you thought of as a mother.
And then ate a member of Saru's species. Way to go. Oh, which they did find out at the start of this episode.
Yeah.
So We did, yeah, because we mentioned that last episode. We couldn't remember if Saru finds out about that, and we got the answer to that question. He does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, and then they kind of, and then Saru and Georgia do a subtle back and forth kind of playing off of it. You know, she's taunting him about, she said that back on her own planet, there was a saying about Kelpians. I don't remember what it was, but something about it makes it
something tough. Yeah, she was talking about the meat, or, you know, something about once they've kind of get a spine for themselves, the meat gets tough, essentially.
Yeah. And then he kind of continues. He's like, yes, I got so tough to which it's almost unpalatable.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Part of that secret exchange where the three of them know what they're talking about, but the crew is like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
Since it was deemed classified and top secret that she was from the alternate universe.
Yeah, with threat of treason. Revealed.
Oh, yeah. So, I guess the only, high note to say on this episode is the very ending when the distress call from the USS NCC-1701, no letter after it, Enterprise. And I think that might be the only reason why I came back to season two, just because they were bringing in Pike and the Enterprise.
Yeah, and I actually was kind of that same way, too. I was curious to see how they did it. They teased it so well, but, man, that first season was just so disappointing. It was like,
there was some highlights in it, and over the last five episodes, including this one, we've talked about, there's been some good episodes in here. And I was like, I can't remember why I didn't like this season as much as I did. And I think it's because this finale leaves such a poor taste in your mouth that it kind of taints the whole season for you.
You know, to me, Discovery almost feels like the Disney remakes of Star Wars, the last three movies, to where it was like, there's some good parts. That's mm-hmm. really great. But there's... the bad parts just outweigh the good, to where it's just hard to watch, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
So, like, there were ups. There were definitely ups to Star Trek Discovery. Yeah. And there was a lot of potential in it. It just, that potential was Paxton Lynch, to use a different example. All the potential in the world, but amount to nothing.
Okay, so if you were to rate the entire season of season one Discovery, how would you overall, what would your overall rating be?
Five and a half out of 10.
Okay.
Slightly above average.
I'll say 6.5 or six, straight six.
Six. I was thinking about six.
Like I said, because there were some good episodes in there. Some that I would even give an 8 out of 10, but it was just the way it ended and how they told the ending, or how they decided to follow through with the ending of this war. It just didn't feel right.
No, well, I remember one of the criticisms that I had of the show when we watched it the first time was it was kind of humorless, very serious, you know, dry, yeah. Not. You know, compared to, you know, you watch any other Star Trek show, or there's always some form of humor, or you have somebody who's kind of got that comic relief, even if it's like a clever, witty dad kind of joke. It's still, there's still humor in it.
But this is Tilly's kind of the
awkward comic.
Well,
relief.
She's the comedic relief here, but it's not in a humorous way. It's more of in a awkward kind of quirky way.
Yeah.
So I want to follow up with this question. Given that you give it a 5.5, if the season ended with 13 instead of having the last two episodes, how would you rate it?
Well,
like if
I don't
they,
know because like
if it ended with they jump back to the universe and they're like, oh my god, the war is almost over. I mean, it does not close the arc at all.
Yeah, and then you kind of pick up the war arc going into season two.
Yeah, and
it'd be like that cliffhanger. If they had like that as a cliffhanger,
but kind of mix it with the Enterprise is returning from its 5-year mission, and it's taken them 9 months to kind of realize the war was going on and get back, and you still had that same kind of ending that we had at the end of the finale, but just kind of tacked on to 13. How would you? I mean, I could see that being the end of the season.
Yeah, you could. The way I was thinking would be do the cliffhanger at the end of season 13, and then you would have them getting onto the bridge. 13. Yeah, at the end of episode 13. And then them getting onto the bridge, boarding the ship in episode 14 would be the start of season 2, episode 1. And then and it would be like the two-part episode. And the end of 15, what was the finale here, would be the end of the two-part season premiere. And then you would get the cliffhanger of Enterprise coming in, and then that's going to be the setup story arc for the rest of the season. That would have been a better way of doing
it. So if it would have ended with 13, how would you have rated this? Would it have been better, worse?
Yeah, I think it would have been better. It wouldn't have been much, probably 6.5 out of 10.
That's what I was thinking. I would probably tack on another point, so it would be a 7 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
Well, that's how we stand on Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it, kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it,
Huxley!
Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
What do we have in store for next week, though?
So, next time on Deep Space High, we are going to jump into Season 2. So check back next week, or whenever you're listening, just next episode. We are going to cover season one, or episode 1, 2, and 3. Oh, are we though? There's only 14 episodes, and I don't remember where the mid-season finale is.
Yeah, we'll get it figured out.
Oh, there isn't one. It went straight all the way through.
Did it?
We'll just do the first three episodes. Yeah, we'll just do the first three episodes. So it'll be episodes 1, 2, and 3, entitled Brother, New Eden, and Point of Light. So that's what you have to look forward to on the next Deep Space High.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it then. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. And be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High and hashtag Tacos and Trek. Also, don't forget to follow our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow either of those, you can stay up to date with our latest announcements.
Yeah, and then also, we want to ask everyone to please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps with the algorithms, spreads the word about the show, attracts more listeners. If you guys have any comments,
we
or
want
you
want
to leave
ratings.
Yeah, you guys want to leave any comments, reviews, have any questions for us, you want to test our knowledge of our respected universes, we have a fair amount of knowledge, feel free to leave a comment on Apple Review as well. I'm Sky Marshal Chris,
and I'm Jedi Master Steve. One of us should say live long and prosper.
Yes, we should
live so long. I did it. There you go.
All right. Yeah.